I understand why. I'm quite aware of what you'd like to do to me, he says, his voice barely a whisper. My fists clench, fingers twitching. I reach for what still won't respond, what can't respond. More silent stone, I mumble, saying the words like a curse. The polished orbs of my wearable prison gleam. You must be running low by now. Thank you for your concern, but the supply is well in order. As I did in the cells beneath the bowl of bones, I spit in his direction. It lands harmlessly at his feet. He doesn't seem to mind. In fact, he smiles. Get it out of your system now. The court will not take kindly to such behavior.
As if I... Court?
The last word sputters out. His smile spreads. I did not misspeak. My insides cringe at the sight of his grin. Lovely, I say. You're tired of keeping me caged up where you can't see me. Actually, I find it difficult being this close to you. His eyes flicker over me with an emotion I don't want to place. The feeling is mutual. I snarl, if only to kill the strange softness in him. I would rather face his fire, his rage, than any quiet word. He doesn't rise to the bait. I doubt that. Where's my leash, then? Do I get a new one? No leash, no collar. He angles his chin at my manacles. Nothing but those now. What he's getting at, I cannot begin to fathom, but I've long stopped trying to understand Maven Kalor and the twists of his labyrinthine brain. So I let him keep talking. He always tells me what I need in the end. Your interrogation was very fruitful. So much to learn about you, about the terrorists calling themselves the Scarlet Guard. My breath catches in my throat. What did they find? What did I miss? I try to remember the most important pieces of my knowledge, to figure out which will be the most harmful to my friends. Tuck, the Monfort twins, the new blood abilities. Cruel people, aren't they? He continues, bent on destroying everything and everyone who is not like them. What are you talking about? The Colonel locked me up, yes, and fears me still. But we are allies now. What could that mean to Maven? New bloods, of course. I still don't understand. There is no reason for him to care about Reds with abilities beyond what he must do to get rid of us. First, he denied we existed, calling me a trick. Now we are freaks, threats, things to be feared and eradicated. It's such a shame. To know you were treated so badly, you felt the need to run from that old man calling himself a colonel. Maven enjoys this, explaining his plan in slivers, waiting for me to piece it together. My head is still foggy, my body weak, and I try my best to figure out what he means. Worse still, that he debated shipping you off to the mountains, discarding you all like garbage. Montfort, but that wasn't what happened. That wasn't what was offered to us. And of course, I was very upset to learn the true intentions of the Scarlet Guard. To make a red world, a red dawn, with room for nothing else, no one else.
Maven.
The word quivers with all the rage I have strength to call. If not for my manacles, I would explode. You can't what? Tell the truth? Tell my country the Scarlet Guard is luring new bloods to its side only to kill them? To make a genocide of them, of you? As well as us, that the infamous rebel Mayor Barrow came back to me willingly, and that this was discovered during an interrogation where the truth is impossible to hide. He leans forward, well within striking distance, but he knows I can barely lift a finger. That you are on our side now because you have seen what the Scarlet Guard truly is, because you and your new bloods are feared as we are, blessed as we are, silver as we are, in everything but the color of blood. My jaw works, opening and closing my mouth, but I can't find the words to match my horror. All this done without Queen Alara's whispers, all this with her dead and cold. You're a monster, is all I can say. A monster, all on his own. He draws back, still smiling. Never tell me what I cannot do, and never underestimate what I will do for my kingdom. His hand falls on my wrist, drawing one finger down the manacle of silent stone, keeping me prisoner. I tremble out of fear, but so does he. With his eyes on my hand, I'm given time to study him. His casual clothes, black, as always, are rumpled, and he does not stand on ceremony. No crown, no badges. An evil boy, but a boy still. One I must figure out how to fight. But how? I'm weak, my lightning is gone, and anything I might say will be twisted beyond my control. I can barely walk, let alone escape unaided. Rescue is all but impossible. A hopeless dream that I can't waste any more time on. I'm stuck here, trapped by a lethal, conniving king. He dogged me over months, haunting me from afar in everything from broadcasts to his deadly notes. I miss you until we meet again. He said he was a man of his word. Perhaps in this alone, he is. With a deep breath, I poke at the only weakness I suspect he might still have. Were you here? Blue eyes snap to mine. It's his turn to look confused. Through this? I glance at the bed, and then far away. It's painful to remember Samson's torture, and I hope it shows. I dreamed you were here. The warmth of him recedes, drawing back to leave the room cold with oncoming winter. His eyelids flutter, dark lashes against white skin. For a second, I remember the maven I thought he was. I see him again, a dream or a ghost. Every second, he answers. When a gray flush spreads across his cheeks, I know it's the truth. And now I know how to hurt him. The manacles make it too easy to fall asleep, so merely pretending to do so is difficult. Beneath the blanket, I clench a fist, digging my nails into my palm. I count the seconds. I count Maven's breaths. Finally, his chair creaks. He stands. He hesitates. I can almost feel his eyes, their touch burning against my still face. And then he goes. Footsteps light against the wood floor, sweeping through my bedroom with the grace and quiet of a cat. The door shuts softly behind him. So easy to sleep. I wait instead. 2 minutes pass, but the Arvingards don't return. I suppose they think the manacles are enough to keep me here. They are wrong. My legs wobble when they hit the floor, bare feet against cold wood and parquet designs. If there are cameras watching, I don't care. They can't stop me from walking, or trying to walk. I don't like doing things slowly, especially now, when every moment counts. Every second could mean another person I love dead. So, I shove off the bed, forcing myself to stand on weak, trembling legs. An odd sensation, with silent stone weighing down my wrists and ankles, leeching what little strength my anger gives me. It takes a long moment to bear the pressure. I doubt I'll ever get used to it. But I can get past it. The first step is the easiest. A lunge to the little table where I take my meals. The second is more difficult, now that I know how much effort it takes. I walk like a man drunk or hobbled. For a split second, I envy my father's wheelchair. The shame of such thoughts fuels my next steps, across the length of the room. Panting, I reach the other side, almost collapsing against the wall. The burn in my legs is pure fire, sending a prickle of sweat down my spine. A familiar feeling, like I've just run a mile. The nausea in the pit of my stomach is different, though. Another side effect of the stone. It makes every beat of my heart feel heavier and wrong somehow. It tries to empty me out. My forehead touches the paneled wall, letting the cold soothe. Again, I force out. I turn and stumble across the room. Again, again, again. By the time Kitten and Trio deliver my lunch, I'm drenched with sweat, and I have to eat lying on the floor. Kitten doesn't seem to care, towing the plate of evenly balanced meat and vegetables toward me. Whatever's going on outside the city walls, it doesn't seem to have any effect on food supply. A bad sign. Trio leaves something else on my bed, but I focus on eating first. I force down every single bite. Getting up is a bit easier. My muscles are already responding, adjusting to the manacles. There's a small blessing in them. The Arvins are living silvers, their ability fluctuating with their own concentration, as changing as crashing waves. Their silence is much harder to adapt to than the constant press of the stone. I rip open the parcel on my bed, discarding the thick, luxurious wrapping. The gown slithers out, falling against my blankets. I take a step back slowly, my body going cold as I'm seized by the familiar urge to jump out the window. For a second I shut my eyes, trying to will the dress away. Not because it's ugly. The dress is shockingly beautiful, a gleam of silk and jewels. But it forces me to realize a terrible truth. Before the dress, I was able to ignore Maven's words, his plan, and what he means to do. Now, it stares me in the face, a mocking piece of artistry. The fabric is red, as the dawn, my mind whispers. But that is wrong, too. This is not the color of the Scarlet Guard. Ours is a lurid, bright, angry red, something to be seen and recognized, almost shocking to the eye. This gown is different. Worked in darker shades, crimson and scarlet, beaded with chips of gemstones, woven with intricate embroidery. It shimmers in the darkest way, catching the light overhead like a pool of red oil. Like a pool of red blood. The dress will make me, and what I am, impossible to forget. I laugh bitterly to myself. It's almost funny. My days as Maven's betrothed were spent hiding. Pretending to be silver. At least now I won't have to be painted into one of them. A very, very small mercy, in the light of all else. So, I am going before his court, and the world, the color of my blood bare, for all to see. I wonder if the kingdom will realize I am nothing more than a lure, hiding a steel-sharp hook. He doesn't come back until the next morning. When he enters, he frowns at the dress, balled up in the corner. I couldn't stand to look at it. I can't really look at him either, so I keep at my exercises, currently a very stunted, slow version of sit-ups. I feel like a clumsy toddler, my arms heavier than usual, but I force through it. He takes a few steps closer and I clench a fist, willing myself to send a spark in his direction. Nothing happens. Just as nothing happened the last dozen times I tried to use my electricity. Good to know they got the balance right, he muses, settling into his seat at the table. Today he looks polished, with his badges bright and shining on his chest. He must have come from outside. There's snow in his hair, and he removes his leather gloves with his teeth. Oh yes, these bracelets are just lovely. I bite back at him, waving one heavy hand in his direction. The manacles are loose enough to spin, but tight enough that I could never pull them off, even if I dislocated a thumb. I considered it until I realized it would be pointless. I'll give Evangeline your compliments. Of course she made them. I scoff. She must be so pleased to know she is the literal creator of my cage. Surprised she has the time, though. She must be spending every second making crowns and tiaras to wear. Dresses, too. I bet you cut yourself every time you have to hold her hand. A muscle in his cheek ticks. Maven has no feelings for Evangeline. Something I've always known. Something I can easily exploit. Have you set a date? I ask, sitting up. Blue eyes flash to mine. What? I doubt a royal wedding is something you could do on short notice. I assume you know exactly when you're marrying Samos. Oh, that. He shrugs, brushing it off with a wave. Planning the wedding is her business. I hold his gaze. If it were her business, she'd have been queen months ago. When he doesn't reply, I push harder. You don't want to marry her. Instead of crumbling, his facade strengthens. He even chuckles, projecting an image of abject disinterest.
That's not why Silvers get married, as well you know.
I try a different tactic,
playing on the pieces of him I used to know.
The pieces, I hope, are still real. Well, I don't blame you for stalling. It isn't stalling to postpone a wedding in wartime. She's not who you would have chosen, as if there's choice in the matter. Not to mention the fact that she was Cal's before she was yours. The mention of his brother stills his lazy protesting. I can almost see the muscles tighten beneath his skin, and one hand flicks the bracelet at his wrist. Every gentle ting of the metal rings as loud as a warning bell. One spark from it, and he will burn. But the fire doesn't scare me anymore. Based on your progress, it should take another day or so for you to learn how to walk properly with those. His words are measured, forced, calculated. He probably rehearsed them before he came in here. And then you'll finally be of some use to me. As I do every day, I glance around the room, looking for cameras.
I still don't see them, but they must be there.
Do you spend all day spying on me, or does the security officer give you a summary? Some kind of written report? Maven lets the remark glance off. Tomorrow you will stand up and say exactly what I tell you to. Or what? I force myself to my feet without any of the grace or agility I used to claim. He watches every inch. I let him. I'm already your prisoner. You can kill me whenever you like. And quite frankly, I'd prefer that to luring new bloods into your net to die. I'm not going to kill you, Mare. Even though he's still sitting, I feel like he towers over me. And I don't want to kill them, either. I understand what the words mean, but not when they come from Maven's mouth. It makes no sense, no sense at all. Why? You'll never fight for us, I know that. But your kind? They're strong. Stronger than many Silvers could ever be. Imagine what we'll do with an army of them, combined with an army of mine. When they hear your voice, they'll come. How they are treated once they arrive depends on your behavior, of course, and your compliance. Finally, he stands. He's grown in the past few months, taller and leaner, taking after his mother, as he does in most things. So I have two choices, and you get to pick which one I follow. Either you bring me new bloods, and they join with us, or I continue finding them on my own and killing them. My slap lands weakly, barely moving his jaw at all. My other hand smacks against his chest, just as inconsequential. He almost rolls his eyes at the effort. He might even enjoy it. I feel my face turn bright red, flushing both in anger and helpless sorrow. How can you be like this? I curse, wishing I could tear him apart. If not for the manacles, my lightning would be everywhere. Instead, words pour out of me, words I can barely think about before they rage from me. How can you still be like this? She's dead. I killed her. You are free from her. You shouldn't be her son anymore. His hand grips my chin, hard, shocking me into silence. The force of it makes me bend, lean backward, almost lose balance. I wish I would. I wish I could fall out of his hands, hit the floor, and splinter into a thousand pieces. Back at the notch, in the warmth of the cot I shared with Cal, deep in the night, I thought of moments like this. Being alone with Maven again. Getting the chance to see what he truly was beneath the mask I remembered and the person his mother forced him to be. In that strange place between sleep and waking, his eyes followed me. Always the same color, but somehow changing. His eyes, her eyes, eyes I knew and eyes I could never know. They look the same now, burning with a cold fire, threatening to consume me. Knowing it's what he wants to see, I let the tears of frustration overwhelm me and fall. He tracks their paths with hunger. Then he shoves me away. I stagger to a knee. I am what she made me, he whispers, leaving me behind. Before the door shuts behind him, I notice guards on either side. Clover and Egg this time. So the Arvins are not far away, even if I somehow manage to free myself. I sink slowly to the floor and sit back on my heels. I put one hand over my face, hiding the fact that my eyes are suddenly dry. As much as I wished Alara's death would change him, I knew it would not. I'm not that stupid. I cannot trust anything where Maven is concerned. The smallest of his ceremonial badges bites in my other hand, hidden by my curling fingers. Even silent stone cannot take away a thief's instincts. The badge's metal pin digs into skin. I'm tempted to let it break through, to bleed crimson and scarlet, to remind myself and anyone watching what I am and what I am capable of. Under the guise of straightening up, I slip the badge under my mattress, along with the rest of my plunder. Hairpins, broken fork tines, shards of shattered glass and porcelain plates. My arsenal, humble as it is, will have to do. I glare at the dress in the corner, as if the dress is somehow at fault for this. "Tomorrow," he said. I return to my sit-ups. 6. Mare. The cards are carefully typed, outlining what I must say. I can't even look at them and leave them lying on my bedside table. I very much doubt I'll get the benefit of maids to make me up into whatever Maven imagines presenting to the court. It looks like an arduous task, buttoning and zipping myself into the scarlet gown. It has a high collar, trailing hem, and long sleeves to hide not just Maven's brand on my collarbone, but the manacles still attached to my wrists and ankles. No matter how many times I escape this elegant pageantry, I seem doomed to play a role in it. The dress will be too big when I finally get it on, loose around the arms and waist. I'm thinner here, no matter how much I force myself to eat. Based on what I can glean from my reflection in the window, my hair and skin have also suffered under the weight of silence. My face is yellowed and sunken, sickly-looking, while red rims my eyes. And my dark brown hair, still tinged by the slow creep of gray at the ends, is rattier than ever, tangled to the root. I braid it back hastily, working the knotted strands. No amount of silk can change what I look like beneath Maven's costume, but it's no matter. I'll never wear it, if all goes to plan. The next step in my preparation makes my heart pound. I do my best to look calm, for the cameras in my bedroom at least. They cannot know what I'm about to do, not if it's going to work. And even if I manage to fool my guards, there's another rather large obstacle. This could kill me. Maven did not put cameras in my bathroom. Not to protect my privacy, but to placate his own jealousy. I know enough of him to realize he won't let another person see my body. The added weight of silent stone, the slabs set into walls, is confirmation. Maven made sure guards would never have a reason to escort me in here. My heart beats sluggishly in my chest, but I push through it. I have to. The shower hisses and steams, scalding hot as soon as I turn it on to full blast. If not for the bathroom stone, I would have spent many days enjoying the singular comfort of a hot wash. I must work quickly, or let myself be smothered. Back at the notch, we were lucky to bathe in cold rivers, while on Tuck, the showers were timed and lukewarm. I laugh at the thought of what passed for bathing at home. A tub filled from the kitchen faucet, warm in the summer, cold in the winter, with stolen soap to clean with. I still don't envy my mother's job of helping my father wash. With any luck, lots of luck, I'll see them again soon. I push the shower head, angling it away from the basin and onto the floor of the bathroom. The water pelts against white tile, drenching it. The spray hits my bare feet, and the heat shivers my skin, gentle and inviting as a warm blanket. As water seeps out beneath the bathroom door, I work quickly. First I put the long shard of glass on the counter, well within arm's length. Then I reach for the true weapon. Whitefire Palace is a marvel in every inch, and my bathroom is no exception. It's lit by a modest chandelier, if there is such a thing, worked in silver, with curling arms like tree branches giving bud to a dozen light bulbs. I have to stand on the sink, precariously balanced, to get at it. A few forceful but focused tugs pull the dangling fixture forward, its wiring peeling through the ceiling. Once I have enough slack, I crouch, the still-lit chandelier in hand, I brace it on the sink to wait. The pounding starts a few minutes later. Whoever is watching my room has noticed the water spilling out from underneath my bathroom door. 10 seconds later, two sets of feet troop into my bedroom. Which Arvin's, I'm not sure, but it doesn't really matter.
Barrow?
A man's voice calls, accompanied by a fist knocking on the bathroom door. They waste no time when I don't respond, and neither do I. Egg pushes the door in, his white face almost blending into the tiled walls as he steps inside, sloshing through. Clover does not follow, but stands with one foot in the bathroom, the other in my bedchamber. It doesn't matter, both her feet are in the puddle of steaming water.
Barrow?
Egg says, slack-jawed at the sight of me. It doesn't take much to let the chandelier drop, but the action feels heavy all the same. It smashes against the wet tile. When the electricity hits the water, a surge pulses through the room, shorting out not just the other bathroom lights, but the lights in my bedroom, probably this entire wing of the palace. Both Arvins jump and twitch as the sparks dance through their flesh. They crumple quickly, muscles seizing. I vault over the water and their bodies, almost gasping as the weight of the bathroom's silent stone melts away. The manacles still weigh on my limbs, and I waste no time searching the Arvins, careful to keep out of the water. I turn out their pockets as quickly as I can, searching for the key that haunts my waking moments. Shaking, I feel a curl of metal beneath Egg's collar, lying flush to his breastbone. With trembling hands, I yank it free and set to loosening my manacles one by one. As they drop away, the silence lifts, bit by bit. I gasp down air, trying to force lightning into myself. It's coming back. It must. But I still feel numb. Egg's body is at my mercy, warm and alive beneath my hands. I could cut his throat and Clover's, slice their jugulars with any one of the jagged bits of glass I keep well hidden. I should do it, I tell myself. But I've already wasted too much time. I leave them living. As expected, the Arvins are trained enough in their duties to have locked my bedroom door behind them. No matter. A hairpin is just as good as a key. I pop the lock in a second. It's been a few days since I stepped outside my prison, and then I was leashed to Evangeline, guarded on all sides. Now the hallway is empty. Dead light bulbs march down the hall overhead, taunting in their emptiness. My electrical sense is weak, barely a spark across the darkness. It has to come back. This won't work if it doesn't come back. I fight a swell of panic. What if it's gone for good? What if Maven took my lightning from me? I sprint as fast as I can, holding on to what I know of Whitefire. Evangeline took me left, to the ballrooms and the great halls and the throne room. Those places will be crawling with guards and officers, not to mention the nobility of Norda, dangerous on their own. So I go right. Cameras follow, of course. I spot them at every corner. I wonder if they shorted out too, or if I'm entertainment for a few officers. They might be making bets on how far I get. The doomed endeavor of a doomed girl. A service stair takes me down a landing, and I almost knock over a servant in my haste. My heart leaps at the sight of him, a boy, my age, maybe his face already flushing as he holds onto his tea tray, flushing red. "It's a trick!" I shout at him. "What they're going to make me do? It's a trick!" At the top of the stairs and the bottom, a pair of doors bang open in succession, cornered again, a bad habit I've developed. "Mayor?" the boy says, my name trembling on his lips. I frighten him. "Find a way. Tell the Scarlet Guard. Tell whoever you can. It's another lie." Someone seizes me around my middle, pulling me backward, up and away. I keep my focus on the serving boy. The uniformed officers ascending from below shove him away, pressing him up against the wall without thought. His tray clatters to the floor, spilling tea. "It's all a lie!" I manage to get out before a hand clamps over my mouth. I try to spark, reaching for lightning that I still barely feel. Nothing happens, so I bite down hard enough to taste blood. The security officer drops his hand, swearing, while another comes up in front of me, deftly grabbing my kicking legs. I spit blood in her face. When she backhands me, the action full of deadly grace. I recognize her. "Good to see you, Sonia," I hiss. I try to kick her in the stomach, but she dodges with boredom. "Please," I beg in my mind, as if the electricity can hear me.
Nothing responds, and I choke back a sob. I'm too weak. It's been too long.
Sonia is a silk, too swift and agile to be bothered with the resistance of a weak girl. I glance at her uniform, black piped with silver, with the blue and red of House Eral on her shoulders. Judging by the badges on her chest and the pins on her collar, she's a ranking officer of security now. Congratulations on the promotion. I growl in frustration, flashing out because it's all I can do. Done with training so soon? She tightens her grip on my feet, her hands like pincers. Too bad you never finished protocol. Still carrying my legs, she rubs her face on her shoulder, trying to wipe away the silver blood on her cheek. You could use some manners. It's only been a few months since I last saw her, standing with her grandmother Ara and Evangeline, dressed in mourning black for the king. She was one of many who watched me in the Bowl of Bones, who wanted to see me die. Her house is famed for their skill, not just in body but in mind. Spies, all, trained to discover secrets. I doubt she believed Maven when he told everyone I was a trick, a Scarlet Guard creation sent to infiltrate the palace, and I doubt she'll believe what's about to happen. I saw your grandmother, I tell her. A daring card to play. Her flawless composure does not change, but I feel her grip on my legs weaken, if only a little. Then she dips her chin. Continue, she's trying to say. In Koros prison, starved, weakened by silent stone. Like I am now. I helped free her. Another might call me a liar, but Sonia remains quiet, her eyes anywhere but me. To anyone else, she looks disinterested. I don't know how long she spent in there, but she put up more of a fight than anyone else. I remember her now, flashing across my memories. An old woman with the vicious strength of her namesake, the Panther. She even saved my life, plucking a razor-sharp wheel out of the air before it could take my head. Ptolemus got her in the end, though, right before he killed my brother. Her gaze falls to the floor, brow furrowed slightly. Every inch of her tightens. For a second, I think she might cry, but the threatening tears never spill. How? I barely hear her. Through the neck. Quickly. Her next slap is well aimed, but without much strength behind it. A show, like everything else in this hellish place.
Keep your filthy lies to yourself, Barrow,
she hisses, ending our conversation. I end up in a heap on my bedroom floor, both cheeks stinging, with the crushing weight of four Arvingards washing over me. Egg and Clover look a bit rumpled, but healers have already seen to their injuries, whatever they were. Pity I didn't kill them. Shocked to see me? I drawl at them, chuckling at the horrific joke. In response, Kitten forces me into the scarlet gown, making me strip in front of them all. She takes her time in the humiliation. The dress smarts as it pulls across my brand. M for Maven. M for Monster. M for Murder. I can still taste the security officer's blood when Kitten shoves the speech cards into my chest. The full strength of the Silver Court has been summoned to the throne room. The high house is pressed together in their usual riot. Every color is an assault. A firework of gems and brocade. I join the chaos, adding blood red to the collection. The doors to the throne room seal shut behind me, caging me in with the worst of them. The houses part to let me pass, forming a long corridor from the entrance to the throne. They whisper as I go, noting every imperfection and every rumor. I catch snippets. Of course they all know about my little adventure this morning. The Arvingards, two in front, two behind, are confirmation enough of my continued status as prisoner. So Maven's newest lie is not for them this time. I try to puzzle out his motives, the turns of his labyrinthine manipulations. He must have weighed the costs of what to tell them, and decided bringing his closest nobles in on such a delicious secret was worth the risk. They won't mind his lies if he isn't lying to them. As before, he sits on his throne of gray stone slabs, both hands clawed to the armrests. Sentinels have his back, lining the wall behind him,
while Evangeline takes his left, standing proud. She glitters, a lethal star, with a cape and slashed gown of intricate silver scales. Her brother, Ptolemus, matches in a new suit of armor, close as a guardian for both his sister and the king. Another bitterly familiar face holds Maven's right. He does not wear armor. He does not need armor. His mind is weapon and shield enough. Samson Mirandus grins at me, a vision in dark blue and white lace, colors I hate above all others, even silver. I am a butcher, he warned me before my interrogation. He was not lying. I will never fully recover from the way he carved me up, a pig on a hook, bled dry. Maven notes my appearance, pleased with it. The same Skonos healer attempted to do something with my hair, pulling it back into a neat tail while swiping a bit of makeup across my frazzled features. She didn't take long, but I wish she'd lingered. Her touch was cool and soothing, fixing up whatever bruises I earned in my doomed escape. I feel no fear as I approach, walking before the eyes of dozens of silvers. There are far worse things to be afraid of, like the cameras ahead, for example. They aren't trained on me yet, but they will be soon. I can hardly stomach the thought. Maven stops us short with a single gesture, holding up his palm. The Arvins know what it means and peel away, leaving me to walk the last few yards by myself. That's when the cameras switch on. To show me walking alone, unguarded, unleashed, a free red standing with silvers. The image will be broadcast everywhere, to everyone I love, and anyone I could ever hope to protect. This simple action might be enough to doom dozens of new bloods and strike a heavy blow against the Scarlet Guard. Come forward, Mare. That is Maven's voice. Not Maven, but Maven. The boy I thought I knew. Gentle. Tender. He keeps that voice stored away, ready to be drawn and used against me like a sword. It strikes me to my core, as he knows it will. In spite of myself, I feel the familiar longing for a boy who does not exist. My footsteps echo on the marble. In protocol, the late Lady Blanos tried to teach me how to hold my face at court. Her ideal expression was cold, emotionless, beyond unfeeling. I am none of those things, and I fight the urge to slip behind such a mask. Instead, I try to school my features into something that will both satisfy Maven and somehow let the country know this is not my choice at all. A hard line to walk. Still grinning, Samson takes a step sideways, leaving space next to the throne. I shiver at the intention, but do as I must. I take Maven's right side. What a picture this must be. Evangeline in silver, me in red, with the king in black between.
7. Cameron. The so-called lightning alert echoes through the main floor of Irabel, up and down the scaffold at landings, back and forth between passages. Runners go out, seeking those of us deemed important enough to get updates on Mare. Usually, I'm not a priority. No one drags me down to be debriefed with the rest of her club. The kids find me later on, at work, and hand me a paper detailing whatever snippets the guard spies gathered on Precious Barrow's cell time. Useless stuff. What she ate, her guard rotation, that kind of thing. But today the runner, a little girl with slick, straight black hair and russet skin, tugs on my arm.
Lightning alert, Miss Cole. Come with me,
she says, adamant and cloying. I want to snap that my priority is to get the heat working in my barracks, not find out how many times Mare used the bathroom today. But her sweet face stops the impulse. Farley must have sent the cutest bleeding kid in the base. Damn her.
All right, I'll go,
I huff, tossing my tools back into their case. When she takes my hand, I'm reminded of Maury. He's shorter than I am, And back when we were kids working the assembly line, he used to hold my hand when the noisy machines frightened him. But this little girl shows no signs of fear. She pulls me through curling passages, proud of herself for knowing which way to go. I frown at the red scrap tied around her wrist. She's too young to be oathed to rebels, let alone living in their tactical headquarters. But then, I was sent to work when I was 5, sorting scrap from the junk piles. She's twice that age. I open my mouth to ask what brought her here, but think better of it. Her parents, obviously, either by their life's choices or their life's ending. I wonder where they might be, just like I wonder about mine. Passages 4 and 5 and sub-7 need wire stripping. Barracks A needs heat. I repeat the always growing list of tasks to dull the sudden pain. My own parents fade from my thoughts as I push away their faces. Daddy driving a transport truck, his hand sure as ever on the wheel. Mama in the factory alongside me, quicker than I'll ever be. She was sick when we left, her hair thinning while her dark skin seemed to gray. I almost choke on the memory. Both of them are out of my reach, but Maury isn't. Maury I can get to. Passages 4 and 5 and sub-7 need wire stripping. Barracks A needs heat. Maury Cole needs to be saved. We reach the passage to Central Control the same time Killorn does. His own runner trails behind, sprinting to keep up with the lanky boy tearing around the corner. Killorn must have been topside, out in the frozen air of oncoming winter. His cheeks bloom red from the cold. As he walks, he pulls off a knit hat, upending uneven tawny locks. Cam? He nods at me, stopping where our paths cross. He vibrates with fear, eyes vividly green in the fluorescent lights of the passage. Any ideas? I shrug. I know less than anyone where Mare is concerned. I don't even know why they bother to keep me in the loop. Probably to make me feel included. Everyone knows I don't want to be here, but I have nowhere else to go. Not back to Newtown, not to the choke. I'm stuck. None, I reply. Killorn glances back at his runner, offering a smile. Thanks, he says, kindly dismissive. The kid takes a hint, turning away with relief. I do the same to mine, gesturing with a bob of my head and a grateful smile. She takes off in the other direction, disappearing around a bend. Starting them young. I can't help but whisper under my breath. Not as young as we were, Killorn replies. I frown. True. In the past month or so, I've learned enough about Killorn to know I can trust him as much as anyone down here. Our lives are similar. He started apprenticing at a young age, and like me, he had the luxury of a job to keep him from conscription, until the rules changed on us both, and we ended up pulled into the Lightning Girl's orbit. Killorn would argue that his presence here is by choice, but I know better. He was Mare's best friend, and he followed her into the Scarlet Guard. Now blind stubbornness, not to mention his fugitive status, keeps him here. But we weren't indoctrinated into something, Killorn. I continue, hesitating to take the next few steps. The control room guards wait a few yards away, silent in their duties at the door. They're watching us both. I don't like the feeling. Killorn offers a strange, sad twitch of a smile. His eyes lower to my tattooed neck, where I am permanently marked with my profession in place. The black ink stands out, even against my dark skin. Yes, we were, Cam, he says quietly. Come on. He slips an arm around my shoulders, moving us both forward. The guards stand aside, letting us pass through the door. This time, the control room is more crowded than I've ever seen. Every technician sits in rapt attention, their focus on the several screens at the front of the room. Each displays the same thing, the burning crown, the emblem of Norda, its flames of red, black, and silver. Usually the symbol bookends official broadcasts, and I assume I'm about to be subjected to the latest message from King Maven's regime. I'm not the only one to think so.
We might see her, Killorn breathes, his voice tempered by equal parts longing and fear. On screen, the image jumps a little, frozen, paused. What are we waiting for?
More like who? I reply, casting a look about the room. As far as I can see, Cal is here already, stoically folded at the back of the room, keeping his distance from everyone. He feels me watching, but doesn't do much more than nod. To my dismay, Killorn waves him over. After a second of hesitation, Cal complies, moving gently through the room as it crowds full. For whatever reason, this lightning alert has drawn many to control, all of them as on edge as Killorn. Most of them I don't recognize, but a few new bloods join the mix. I spot Rash and Tahir at their usual position, seated with their radio equipment, while Nanny and Ada stick close together. Like Cal, they occupy the back wall, reluctant to draw any attention to themselves. As the prince gets closer, red officers all but jump out of his way. He pretends to ignore it. Cal and Killorn trade weak smiles. Their usual rivalry is long gone, but replaced by trepidation.
Wish the colonel would move his ass a little faster, a voice says on my right.
I turn to see Farley sidle up to us, doing her best to remain inconspicuous despite her belly. It's mostly hidden by her large jacket, but it's hard to keep secrets in a place like this. She's close to 4 months and doesn't care who knows. Even now, she balances a plate of fried potatoes in one hand, a fork in the other.
Cameron, boys, she adds, nodding at us in turn.
I do the same, as does Killorn. She gives Cal a mock salute with her fork, and he barely grunts a response. His jaw clenches so tightly his teeth might shatter.
Thought the colonel slept in here,
I reply, fixing my gaze on the screen.
Typical. The one time we need him around.
Any other day, I would wonder if his absence was a ploy. Maybe to let us know who's in charge, as if any of us could forget. Even next to Cal, a silver prince and general, or a host of new bloods with a terrifying array of abilities, he somehow manages to hold all the cards. Because here, in the Scarlet Guard, in this world, information is more important than anything, and he's the only one who knows enough to keep control of us all.
I can respect that. Parts of a machine don't need to know what the other pieces are doing. But I'm not just a gear. Not anymore.
The colonel enters, flanked by Mayor's brothers. Still no sign of her parents, who remain stowed away somewhere, alongside her sister with the dark red hair. I thought I saw her once, a smart, quick thing darting through the mess hall, but I never got close enough to ask. I've heard rumors, of course. Whispers from the other technicians and soldiers. A security officer crushed the girl's foot, forcing Mare to beg at the Summer Palace. Or something like that. I have a feeling that asking Killorn for the real story would be inconsiderate. The control center turns to watch for the colonel, eager for him to start whatever we're here to see. So we react together, stifling gasps or surprised expressions when another silver follows the colonel into the already crowded room. Every time I see him, I want to hate him. He was the reason Mayor forced me to join her, forced me to return to my prison, forced me to kill, forced others to die so this insignificant dry twig of a man could live. But those choices weren't his. He was a prisoner as much as I was, doomed to the cells of Koros in the slow crushing death of silent stone. It's not his fault the Lightning Girl loves him, and he must bear the curse that love brings with it. Julian Jacos does not shrink against the back wall with the new bloods, and he doesn't take the spot next to his nephew Cal either. Instead, he keeps close to the colonel, allowing the crowd to part so that he might see this broadcast as best he can. I focus on his shoulders as he settles into place. His posture reeks of silver decadence, straight-backed, perfect. Even in the hand-me-down uniform faded by use, with gray in his hair and the pallid, cold look we all take on underground, there's no denying what he is. Others share my sentiments. The soldiers around him touch their holstered guns, keeping one eye on the silver man. The rumors are more pointed where he is concerned. He's Cal's uncle, a dead queen's brother, Mayor's old tutor. Woven into our ranks like a thread of steel among wool, embedded but dangerous and easily pulled free. They say he can control a man with his voice and his eyes, like the queen could, like many still can. One more person I will never, ever turn my back on. It's a long list. Let's see it, the colonel barks, cutting off the low murmur born of Julian's presence. The screens respond in kind, jittering into motion. No one speaks, and the sight of King Maven's face cuts through us all. He beckons from that hulking throne, deep in the heart of the silver court, eyes wide and inviting. I know he's a snake, so I can ignore his well-chosen disguise. But I imagine most of the country cannot see through the mask of a young boy called to greatness, dutifully doing what he can for a kingdom on the edge of chaos. He's good-looking, not broad like Cal, but finely shaped, a sculpture of sweeping cheekbones and glossy black hair. Beautiful, not handsome. I hear someone scratching notes, probably recording everything on screen, allowing the rest of us to watch unfettered, focused only on what horror Maven is about to perform. He leans forward, one hand extended, as he stands to call someone to him. Come forward, Mayor. The cameras turn, revolving smoothly to show Mayor standing before the king. I expect it rags, but instead she wears finery I could never dream of. Every inch of her is covered in blood-red gemstones and embroidered silk. It all shimmers as she walks down a grand aisle, parting the crowd of silvers assembled for whatever this is. No more collar, no more leash. Again, I see through the mask. Again, I hope the kingdom does too. But how can they? They don't know her like we do. They don't see the shadows in her dark eyes, flickering with every step, her hollow cheeks, the purse of her lips, the twitching fingers, a tightening jaw. And that's only what I notice. Who knows what Cal or Killorn or her brothers can see in the Lightning Girl? The dress covers her from just below her neck to wrist and ankle, probably to hide bruises, scars, and the brand she bears from the king. It's not a dress at all, but a costume. I'm not the only one to suck in a breath of fear when she reaches the king. He takes her hand in his, and she hesitates to close her fingers. Only a fraction of a second, but enough to cement what we already know. This is not her choice. Or if it is, the alternative was much, much worse. A current of heat ripples on the air. Killorn does his best to sidle away from Cal without drawing attention, bumping into me. I make room as best I can. No one wants to be too close to the Fire Prince if things go south. Maven does not have to gesture. Mare knows him and his schemes well enough to understand what he wants from her. The camera image pulls back as she moves to the right of his throne. What we see now is a display of ultimate strength. Evangeline Samos, the king's betrothed, a future queen in power and appearance on one side, with the Lightning Girl on the other, silver and red. Other nobles, the greatest of the high houses, stand in assembly on the dais. Names and faces I don't know, but I'm sure many here do. Generals, diplomats, warriors, advisors, every one of them dedicated to our complete annihilation. The king takes his throne again, slowly, eyes locked deep into the camera, and so into us.
Before I say anything else, before I begin this speech,
he gestures, confident and almost charming.
I want to thank the fighting men and women, silver and red, who serve to protect our borders, who are currently defending us from enemies outside this nation and the enemies within. To the soldiers of Corvium, the loyal warriors resisting the constant and deplorable terrorist attacks of the Scarlet Guard, I salute you, and I am with you.
Liar!
Someone snarls in the room, but they're quickly hushed. On screen, Mare looks like she shares the sentiment. She does her best not to twitch or let her face betray her emotions. It works. Almost. A flush creeps up her neck, partially hidden by her high collar. Not high enough. Maven would have to put a bag over her head to hide her feelings.
In recent days, after much deliberation with my council and the courts of Norta, Mare Barrel of the Stilts was sentenced for her crimes against this kingdom. She stood accused of murder and terrorism, and we believed her to be the worst of the rats gnawing at our roots.
Maven glances up at her, face still and focused. How many times he's practiced this? I don't want to know.
Her punishment was to face a lifetime in prison, after first being interrogated by my own cousins of House Mirandus.
At the king's bidding, a man in dark blue steps forward. He comes within inches of Mare, close enough to brush a hand against whatever part of her he chose. She freezes in place, snapping every centimeter still to keep from flinching.
I am Samson of House Mirandus, and I performed the interrogation of Mare Barrow.
Ahead of me, Julian raises a hand to his mouth, the only indication of how affected he is.
As a whisper, my ability allows me to bypass the usual lies and twists of speech that most prisoners rely on. So when Mare Barrow told us the truth of the Scarlet Guard and its horrors, I confess I did not believe her. I testify here on record that I was wrong to doubt her. What I saw in her memories was painful and chilling.
Another round of whispers through the room. Another round of hushing. The tension is still palpable, though, as well as the confusion. The colonel straightens, arms crossed. I'm sure they're all thinking on their sins and what this Samson fool could be rattling on about. On one side, Farley taps her fork against her lip, eyes narrowed. She curses under her breath, but I can't ask why. Mare lifts her chin, looking like she might vomit on the king's boots. I bet she wants to.
I went to the Scarlet Guard, willingly, she says. They told me my brother had been executed while serving in the legions for a crime he did not.